Good morning, or if you're in another part of the world, good afternoon or good evening or whatever. Thanks for tuning in. You're watching Deprogram with Ted Rall and Jamarl Thomas. It is Friday, May 29th, 2026. Please like, follow, and share the show. If you have questions or comments, please put them into the live chat if you're watching in the 9 o'clock hour, East Coast time here in the United States. Good morning, JT. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. What's going on, man? Doing okay this morning?
I am doing okay. Glorious weather here. Just amazing, like stunning. I'm a collector of money. I love to collect paper money. I collect all sorts of things. I'm quite the collector. Propaganda posters, political buttons, coins, stamps. I'm a pack rat. I took great interest in the new $250 bill the United States Treasury is apparently planning, and that's a real thing. There's already been a few resignations from inside the Treasury Department and the Mint from people who are angry about this plan. We can get into the details of that. And, look, this would have been a classic John story, but he's not here, so we're going to do it anyway. The CIA, a former senior CIA official, apparently was sitting in his house there near you in Virginia. Little did you know that if you broke into his house, you would have found over $40 million in hundreds of gold bars stolen from the CIA. $40 million in gold. So, you heard of the millionaire next door. He's under arrest, David Rush. We'll talk about that. We talked.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. What is his name? David Grush?
David Rush. Yeah. So here's the
Rush. Story. Okay.
Yeah. Let's just talk about it. Right. So this dude. So basically, what happened is he's a senior former CIA official. The CIA got wind of the fact that he had stolen this money from the CIA, or I should say, the gold, and they went into his house. They notified the FBI. The FBI raided his house, and he's under arrest, right? So the logical question here is, how did it that he came to steal gold from the CIA? Well, it turns out that he checked it out. He told the CIA, I need this gold for an assignment. And that assignment, we don't know what the nature of it is. But you and I both know from stories from the War on Terror that the United States likes to throw around hundreds of millions, billions of dollars in cash. I didn't know that they used gold, but basically to bribe foreign warlords, dictators, and so on. Like, for example, and this happens all the time, when the Israelis raided the homes of the top officials of Hamas during their invasion of Gaza, they found, hundreds of millions of euros that had been delivered by, wait for it, the United States and Israel to Hamas when they were supporting Hamas in order to sort of, divide and conquer the Palestinian Authority, right? So, I mean, Hamas is a wholly owned, you know, subsidiary of Israel, but that's a different discussion. So, and during the Iraq War, this was really a great story. I don't know if you remember it, JT, but at one point, four C-130s containing over $25 billion in $100 bills were sent to Iraq to bribe local tribal officials, warlords, you know, various Iraqi people of influence by the CIA. They, at the end of all this, they couldn't account for a penny. They didn't have, literally, it was just all gone. And it's like, there's just, the money is just, so this is just a reminder that, like, while you and I are worried about how we're going to keep the lights on every month, and ordinary Americans don't know if they can send their, you know, their kid to the doctor, that the government is awash in money and they're using it for the stupidest things. And I mean, in a way, I don't even blame this dude. It's like, there he is. He's probably like, if he's a senior official, what did the guy make? Let's say he's a GS-15. What did he make? Like $150,000, $200,000 a year. He sees all that money. He's like, I can give all this gold to, you know, who knows what evil reprobates that, like, the, you know, right wingers in Venezuela or whatever. Or I can, you know, keep it for a person that I like better, me. And so, I mean, it's kind of like, I'm not surprised that, you know, cops steal money from drug dealers when they raid them. I'm surprised that they don't. So, like, you know, I mean, it's just, you're just creating a system. But anyway, the scale of this is monumental.
Yeah. So he's like, hey, Delcy Rodriguez needs a new pair of shoes and a new Mustang. So I need to check out the gold bars to give to her. Look, you explained it beautifully. Like, we bribe people all the time. Like, meaning it's by hook or by crook. The Smedley Butler, Wars of Iraq, in that book, he points out that, you know, we would send in jackals, and those were people who would be like, hey, you can get a new house, a new car, your kids will be good for life, you can send your kids to the U.S. for education, here are all the benefits, you want gold bars, here are gold bars, we just need you to do X, Y, and Z. Basically, we need you to bend over, and we need you to kind of accept it, but we will pay you handsomely for it. It's that, meaning his job on some level was getting those gold bars to people for influence. And what's wild about it, as you also point out, it's like the money doesn't matter. Like, that's what I mean when I say, under normal circumstances, when we're going after governments, whether it's knocking them over militarily, bribing them or whatever else, the fallback consequences to the American public don't typically exist. They exist in the sense of, okay, you spent $10 trillion on the Iraq and Afghanistan war. Okay, that's a number. Do we really feel that number? That really? We're $39 trillion in debt. So obviously the number is a thing, but it's not something that really has legit consequences.
Dick Cheney, so, yeah, it don't matter.
Yeah, it's like it doesn't matter, which is wild. Like, that's a very weird phenomena that seems to only exist in America, where the money doesn't matter. And so, yeah, this guy's like, they're not going to miss it.
It's Bretton Woods, right? Like, when you're the world's reserve currency, you know, as the Dire Straits song goes, you get your money for nothing and your chicks for free, right? I mean, you literally, there are no consequences. During the invasion, U.S. invasion of Afghanistan, and I was there, but I didn't obviously see this kind of money, but it was widely reported that about 800 CIA paratrooped into northern Afghanistan, all carrying massive backpacks full of cash. And as I learned, in a war zone like that, I'm just going to quote Lois Romano of the Washington Post, who I was there with. She said, in a war zone, everything is paid in bundles of $100 bills, even for ordinary people. And that was true. And we're talking about a country where at the time, $15 to $20 a month was considered an excellent salary. So, suddenly, and that's part of what happened, with the Northern Alliance government set up under Hamid Karzai, is they were every month or so, or every week or whatever, pallets of cash were flown in to Kabul and dropped off with like people like Karzai's family, not so much Karzai himself, and all these top officials. And even now, something that many Americans are unaware of, even now, the United States is continuing to pay hundreds of millions of dollars in cash to the Taliban government. It's like the even before 9/11, the United States was sending hundreds of millions of dollars in cash to the Taliban government to pay their government salaries. This was to compensate them for opium eradication, and
Right.
it's like that all over the world, right? And the thing is, cash has a toxic effect. I mean, it's completely liquid. That's why people want it. And but therefore it's also completely unaccountable, and it drives up massive inflation. I mean, when I was there in 2001, I got wind of an NGO in Kabul that had rented out a house in Kabul. It was paying $10,000 a month in Kabul. Okay, a place where if you wake up in the morning alive, you're a lucky person. At the time, now it's much safer, and it's like 10,000. I mean, it wasn't worth $100 a month, and but with the inflation that was caused by the massive inflation, which caused utter misery, and for it put ordinary Afghans into a position where they had to be like either corrupt and work for the corrupt powers, or they starve to death and die. And that talk about resentment. No wonder they wanted us out.
Well, lessons learned. That was a document that the U.S. military commissioned to understand how they effed up so bad in both wars and how did they end up losing both of those wars ultimately when the Taliban effectively took power back. And what they pointed out was exactly what you're saying, that they were given, let's say, like $1 billion to spend. And he pointed out, like, how are we going to spend $1 billion in a place that basically has mud huts? Like, meaning, where do you spend this money?
It's ridiculous, right? It's like Brewster's Millions, right? Like spending, it's hard.
It's like you have a place with mud huts, no infrastructure. And they're like, okay, here's a bunch of money. Now we need you to spend it to bribe people and everything else. And it's like, okay, what am I going to do with this money? And you're talking about like millions of dollars every week that they are supposed to spend. And obviously it drives corruption, which, as you point out,
On
even
steroids.
in the lessons learned document, where the public looks at the government as being so radically corrupt,
And by
meaning
the way,
they don't have credibility.
and by the way, JT, how much does it cost to bribe a congressman here in the United States? A few grand, right? Like you can buy a congressman for 5 grand, no problem.
Yeah, they're pretty
It's
cheap.
hilarious. We're paying these people who are living in places with a much lower cost of living, a lot more than our own people. I mean, it's very, very fucked up. I mean, look, the mark, what this is about is, it's not about Greece. I don't know what the intent is, but the effect is, when we pour billions of dollars into a war zone like this in some shithole country, right, is not like you're not really renting people. Like it's not a tip. It's not like a $5,000 bribe. It is like you're actually changing the economy of the place because the scale is so massive. When the U.S. troops went into the home of Taliban leader Mullah Muhammad Omar, the one-eyed cleric, right? They were shocked because they were looking, were like looking for the money. There was no money. Mullah Omar had a locker under his he lived very frugally. He lived in a mud adobe house with no windows and no glass in the windows. He was cold at night. It was very primitive. He liked that. He was like, I'm an ascetic. I don't need a lot. He had a locker with the entire national budget of Afghanistan in there, which at the time comprised about 150,000 US dollars. You doled that out to people personally, like in a mirror. And, I mean, and they looked in vain for the bank account, the numbered accounts in Switzerland or, in Luxembourg and so on. They did not, the Cayman Islands didn't find anything. There was no corruption under Taliban 1.0, 1996 to 2001. It's why the Taliban were popular. The corruption. And so we brought back, we bring in corruption. You don't, I don't know, if you need Delcy Rodriguez on your side, you don't really need to give her, $100 million. If you do, you're not really renting Delcy Rodriguez as the acting president of Venezuela. What you're really doing is you're telling her your days are numbered and this is your retirement plan for you and all the people you care about. And that's a different mentality.
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, because the reality of it is, even with Syria, the belief is that a lot of these people were effectively paid off. Meaning, it is
Oh,
a
yeah.
better military strategy to just pay people as opposed to attacking a country. Meaning, if I can pay you off, I don't have to attack you. And in the case of Venezuela, it was, I guess, a little bit of both. I mean, because what they were using or what they were saying seemed ludicrous to me. It was a beam that made people get sick at the stomach. And the military went in as they were throwing up or as they were on the toilet. It was like, okay, dude, are you serious right now? It sounds more to me like people were bribed and you were able to get your hands on them because people were bribed, especially if there's a change in policy after the fact, which it seems to be. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not shocked that this guy had all these gold bars. Obviously, this is what the CIA does every day, like meaning even on a Tuesday, they would be giving gold bars to somebody. It's just funny that it's gold bars and not cash.
Oh,
But
it's
yeah,
hilarious. Remember Gold Bar Menendez, the senator from New Jersey? I mean,
yes.
and he only had what, a few. I mean, hundreds of gold bars. I mean, again, I'm not surprised. I mean, like, of course, as the great philosopher said, you got to know when to hold them and know when to fold them. He obviously didn't know that, right? And basically, but at a certain point, you're like, it's like Frog and Toad. I'll just have one very last cookie. And it's like, he took home a gold bar and it's like, oh, that was easy. They're so small. And it's like, here's another one. And he kept it in his house, right? In his house. Like,
I
why
see.
not? Like,
I
why not
wonder how they
go
do
to like a state park, find an empty tree trunk,
Yeah. I wonder how they caught him. I mean, like, if he signed them out,
But I know how they caught him.
he was supposed to give it to somebody and then give it to him, probably.
Yeah, someone complained. Where the fuck
Yeah.
is my gold bar?
Where's my money? I'm a gold bar short. I'm two gold bars short. If you
Gotta
want to
be.
keep bribing me, I need my gold bars. Where are my gold bars?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. They call 1-800 CIA help.
Right. You're on the customer service line. I'm missing my gold bars. I can't find my gold bars. Where is it?
Oh
Where
my
is it?
God. And they just have this, like, at the CIA, they have this safe that's massive with bundles. I mean, like, bear in mind, right? 20, like, four C-130s. Those are the ones where the nose opens up in the front and they can put a plane inside the plane, right? Like a C-130 is like, I mean, it requires a landing, a runway that's 2 miles long to get up and down. It's a fucking monster. Piled to the ceilings with pallets of shrink wrapped hundreds, right? Like $100 bills is $10,000, like one little bundle, right? Those things are all wrapped together. I mean, I know I've personally had to, for a client, handle $1 million in cash once. And
Yeah.
that's a lot of money. That's like heavy. It's like, you wouldn't really want to carry that shit like to Europe in, as check-in. It's heavy. It's like, and a billion of that is a thousand of those, right? And then 25,000, I mean, of those, like, what?
That's
It's just,
insane.
the scale is ridiculous.
While people starve
What email
and
address?
scramble.
Hey, Robbie.
Hey, sorry, just 1 second. My wife is talking, so I'll be back.
Okay. All right. Well, that's what happens. Okay. I guess that's an opportunity to see. Speaking of money, we can get a few gold bars from Rumble Premium. Doesn't look like it though. Not right now. Anyway, I just love this story. I will make sure that we say that he is alleged to have done right. this.
I'm back.
Yeah.
And well, so for those of you who have gold bars that you have acquired illicitly, not illicitly, whatever that word is. Remember, I'm retarded and I'm tired. I'm going to do you a solid. So what you do is that you get your gold bar, and you don't do this all at once. Like you do it once every couple of months. You take your gold bar, and then what you do is that you deposit it with MoonPay. That way, your gold bar then links up to Rumble Wallet. So that way, you can use a debit card linked to your Rumble Wallet account, and it's just like cash. You don't have to keep your gold in your house anymore. So for those of you who have this, you can thank me later. You can send me a tip through Rumble CIA Wallet. Agents. Well, just whoever. I mean, CIA agents, APAC bundlers. I mean, it doesn't really matter. I mean, Washington's full of whores. And if you need to move your money, MoonPay plus Rumble Wallet equals your best friend.
This is my
favorite. And that CIA agent, Robbie, if he would have known this in advance, he might, you know.
Yeah. He might be okay.
Actually, he would have been screwed either way.
Because the moment they call, hiding the money gives you leverage. He could, if you hide the money and you want it, and they want it back, you can negotiate for a better deal, right? Yeah. Like I'm not telling you where the gold is unless you agree. Like I only go to jail for a year, right?
Yeah, let me go live in college. I don't have to go. I gave it to them. These people are lying about it. Mm-hmm. I should do that too.
Yeah, there's problems about gold going up. Crime, right?
Yeah.
Exile me to Kazakhstan. I will live in the Montana of Asia.
Kazakhstan is a close U.S. ally. Would turn your ass over.
Yeah, you need to go somewhere that not a U.S. ally.
Well, in all fairness, though, the U.S. did try to color revolution them, and the Russians stepped in and said, not in our backyard. So no, they're not that close.
That's not Kazakhstan. That's Tajikistan.
No, they did the same thing in Kazakhstan. They tried to
They
did the riots there.
They did do it to Kyrgyzstan.
Yeah, they tried to do it in Kazakhstan, and the Kazakh president was just like, hey, Vlad, can you help me out here? And the Russians there, lickety-split.
Akayev, the president it was Kyrgyzstan, who was deposed by Bush in 2005, the only democratically elected leader of a former Soviet republic in Central Asia. When he fled because American-trained radical Islamists from Osh surrounded the presidential palace. I love this story. His presidential guards were like, you know, okay, we have machine guns on the roof. We're gonna mow them down. And he said, I forbid it. Like, no Kyrgyz should die because of me. And he's like, I'm leaving. So he went to exile in Russia, where he is now. And when the mob burst into his office, there was a note on the desk that said, please take good care of my country.
You love that story? I don't know if I like that story.
I like that story because it's like sort of, I mean, his attitude, which was.
You can make the case that Richard Nixon, that the election in 1960 was stolen from him by Kennedy because of voter fraud in Chicago.
Although that's pretty debunked, though.
Well, I mean, it depends on who you ask.
Often say that. I don't know if that's true.
It's not. Well, there's no doubt there was, like, here's the thing. Illinois absolutely had like lots of dead people voting, no question, due to the daily machine. But even if Illinois had gone for Nixon, he still would have lost.
Well, maybe. But the point I'm trying to make, though, is that when his advisors recommended Nixon, he made a stink out of it. He said, no, it's okay. Kennedy loves his country. It's in good hands. So, yeah,
but that's the old days. That's the way they used to, like John Wayne, you know, I didn't vote for him, but he's my president. I hope he does well. That's not really the way they look at it today.
Well, that's not how it is now. Now it's about who can peck at the corpse the most.
Yeah, by hook or by crook. Yeah. The Kyrgyzstan, like, the reason why I don't like that is because I don't like, it sets a bad precedent that goes beyond just the individual circumstance. I mean, and it's like kind of like Evo Morales stepping down when the fascists was taking over the country. And Evo's thing is, look, I don't want to have a war, and which is effectively what would take place. There'll be some kind of civil war of sorts, or some kind of...
Or Al Gore not fighting Bush v. Gore.
Yeah, but see, I don't think these things are positive, especially from a larger context. I get the immediate of it. But the entire point of people doing stuff like that is because they believe that the other side won't fight for their country when it's really the responsibility of the president to defend the country. And so
you're hardcore, and so am I usually. And so, I mean, I definitely see your point. Look, I think Evo Morales should have fought. I think the Cuban government should not be negotiating with Trump. I think they should be like, you want it? Come and invade. Come and take it. Come and take it by force. Like, you know, like the Iranians, like finally, look at the Iranians. They pushed up for a few times. And then finally, when they're like, famously, like, we've closed the Strait of Hormuz, let the orange pig try to open it. That obviously worked out better.
Yeah. It's not that I get it, right? But the reason that they put people in this position is because they're basically saying, we dare you to defend your country.
Yeah.
Because of what it costs to do so.
But there's a cost to us too. And you know, as Iran is inflicting, I mean, obviously every situation is different in terms of the cost. JT, up for some comments?
Yes.
Okay. Maybe Bluth Funk, I was thinking about Jackson Pollock. Did he pee on his painting?
What?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Did he pee on his painting?
I've been to the Jackson, to the Pollock Krasner house in East Hampton, New York. And that is where he lived with his wife, the fellow artist, Polly Krasner. And I've seen the studio where he worked. It's kind of fascinating because you can see the outlines of where there was a square or a rectangular painting and then where the paint splattered off there. He used house paint, which is the crazy part, which means if you own a Pollock, it's probably going to start to fall apart, you know, sooner rather than later, right? Because the paint sucks. It's not really, it's low quality paint. It's not proper paint for, anyway. Frank Field, sounds like the CIA doesn't want dollars either. let's see. Phrasmatas, does the chat remember spirit cooking in the WikiLeaks emails around Halloween 2016 that was verifiably black magic that Latino and black voters talked about on Facebook and in church, but then Share Blues CEO's ex-husband's pizza shop Comet Ping Pong becomes the focus of Pizzagate, which, although compelling, only makes sense to white people who already likely voted for Trump. Okay.
I didn't fully get into whatever the hell that was. I just thought it was weird.
Roguebot, I love this. I wonder how much money was buried in Afghanistan and Iraq, only to be retrieved later by some retired military personnel. It's like Three Kings, right?
Yeah. I wouldn't be shocked. And in fact, that gets to your point about why did he keep it in his house? Like, if you're going to get that money, why don't you put that money somewhere? And why don't you have to say, I don't know, maybe we think too much about the CIA. Maybe we think they're smarter than what they actually are. But I guess my first thought is, why wouldn't you have an exit plan? If you're shuffling gold bars, I would think that you're shuffling with the idea of going somewhere else and disappearing with that money.
I think it's, you know, I think it's an addiction, right? I think it starts out like you're, like the first time, like he probably, I'm willing to bet, like, you know, my own gold bars that that the following is what happened. He at first was paying out the gold bars in cash and Rolexes. There were Rolexes too, dutifully as required. And it's like dropping them off with, you know, Emirati sheiks or whatever. And then after a while, he's like, what if I kept one? What would happen? And then, like, he keeps it and nothing happens. Then he's like, rinse, lather, repeat. And then, so because of the way that he's thinking of it that way, it's not like a master criminal who's like, man, I would like to, like, do like the Johnny Cash song, one piece at a time. I would like to bring this back. I would like to build up a little cute seven-figure nest egg. How am I going to do that? That mentality is entirely different. You would think, like, if you're thinking about it with your best friend, like you and I over drinks, we're like thinking about, like, how would we do this? If we'd be like, well, you don't keep it at the house, right? But he's not thinking that way. It's his own little secret that he's maybe keeping from his family, probably keeping from his family. He's just doing it himself. And it's his own little, it's his little thing. He's like a little squirrel. I think it's so psychological. It's not logical. It's psychological.
Yeah. I mean, by the way, he could have been paying people in the U.S. too. it's the CIA. I mean, these are, what is it? Operation, oh, what is the name of, I forget the name of it. But they were paying people in the U.S. also. I mean, I wouldn't put it past.
No, no, for sure. Although they're not supposed to do anything like that. P.W. Walker, that money comes right back to the U.S., which is why they were so winning to throw it around in places like willing to throw it around in places like Afghanistan, or those running the program were skimping off the top. Crown Heights Brainiac, thanks for the $9 or $10, I should say. If Putin and Xi decide to go after the petrol dollar, I won't be mad. The U.S. uses it for sanctions, conflict, and regime change. Agreed.
Yeah, agreed. But that seems to be happening naturally. I mean, like anything that you use as a weapon, and you use it as a weapon at one point that was, let's say, where it was uncontested as a weapon, it would inevitably, your enemies are going to find ways to deal with it. Same thing with nuclear weapons, where the U.S. gets a nuke, starts threatening China and Russia, or at the time, the Soviet Union with using a nuke. In a very short period of time, the Soviet Union gets their own nuclear weapon. Soviet Union puts up a satellite. In a very short period of time, United States goes to the moon. Meaning it's never going to be a situation where a particular weapon is uncontested. The issue is that the U.S. decided to use their leverage in the economic system as a weapon, which is very dodgy, because obviously the other countries are going to find ways to mitigate that weapon, which is the reason why the U.S. At one point had, 75% in regards to countries using the dollars, and that number dropped down to 50% currently. Like, there's a reason for that. It's not random.
Yeah, you can only do that if you are totally a neutral actor.
Yes.
And you never weaponize it. And I mean, that's it. Yeah. Okay. So Frank Field, giving someone that kind of money in a poor country basically turns that person into a mini oligarch. True. Yeah. Stormborn, thanks for the $5. Good morning, gents. What are your thoughts on the Russian drone strike in Romania? Will they invoke Article 5 and bring NATO into this? Thank you for bringing that up.
I thought it was an accident. I didn't take it as a drone strike. Calling a drone strike acts as if Russia intentionally hit Romania.
It is a drone strike. I mean, I agree with you. It has to be an accident. I mean, it's happened. It's happened before. Ukrainian drones have gone into Poland. Remember that time Russia was accused. I mean, drones go off target. They get lost, and part of the danger of drones. So something that doesn't really happen in conventional warfare with normal ballistic missiles, they don't really go into other countries entirely. There's probably someone will point out an exception to that, but I can't think of one. But it's happened before.
By the way, they didn't enact Article 5 over Ukraine hitting Latvia, or like the drones that were washing into the shores of Estonian states. I mean, the Latvian government literally collapsed, if I'm not mistaken, if I'm remembering this correctly.
That's correct, yeah.
The result of the drones that were flying into Latvia. Now, it's very possible that Russian operators took control of those drones in order to fly them into some of the Baltic states, but they were still Ukrainian drones. They didn't declare Article 5. I don't think NATO wants to have that fight with this Russian military.
They do. They do.
Don't.
Yeah. And I think it's like, it's just sort of like, we look, it's relatively minor. It was clearly not, I mean, Russia, we know, didn't do this on purpose, and it sucks for the people whose apartment got blown up. But it's not like, Article 5 is not going to be invoked here. Although when I heard about it, I'm scared. And the very fact that, by the way, this question comes up is why NATO is dangerous. Article 5 is dangerous. It is, it's like, this shouldn't be something that anyone in Brussels has to discuss. It shouldn't be like, oh, so do we go to World War III over this? No, okay, all right, everybody go home. I mean, I'm glad that cool heads prevail, but I mean, they shouldn't have to. The structure shouldn't exist in the first place.
Yeah, agree.
Govman, thanks for the $7. How could Gore have fought Bush v. Gore without a rebellion? It was Supreme Court, it was over. He could have complained more, I guess. Okay, so let me tell you, first of all, there are things that in Bush v. Gore Gord didn't do correctly. But that's a different question. Like, for example, he didn't ask for a statewide recount in Florida. He asked for a Democratic county's recount. That provided the opening for the Supreme Court to rule against him. It was also really boneheaded because the counties that are going to undercount your votes are going to be the counties that are controlled by the opposite party, right? So better to ask for a Republican county's recount, right? So his party, his campaign was run by fools. But yes, he could have gone on TV every single day and done rallies and said, they stole it from me. We know you can do that. Donald Trump did it. He could have said, you know, like, this is not acceptable. He could have created a constitutional crisis. He could have refused to concede. He could have tried to fight it again in the courts. I mean, the fact is that Al Gore won the 2000 election, and he won the state of Florida by tens of thousands of votes. And it's, you know, that's kind of like beyond, I mean, I wouldn't say it's beyond dispute, but it's provable. And he didn't do that. He chose to be a gentleman. What was her name? His campaign manager from New Orleans. He's always on. Oh God, what is her name? It's going to come to me anyway. I was talking to her about signing her for syndication when I used to be an editor at United Media, and we ran a syndication arm. And so she came in. She wanted to write a syndicated column, and she was Al Gore's campaign manager, and she told me one-on-one that on election night 2000, at about 9 o'clock at night Eastern time, right after the last polls had closed, she walked into the hotel suite where, and she saw Gore on the phone, and she asked one of the other staffers, who's he on the phone with? And she was told, oh, he's on the phone with Bush. He's calling to concede. And she was like, what? Now, bear in mind, right? So she walked over and hung up on Bush. She pushed the receiver down and just basically like, you're gone. You're not calling. And yelled at him like, what the fuck is wrong with you? It's like she said, he didn't have the hunger. He didn't have the fire in his belly. He didn't want to be president. He didn't care enough. He didn't have any fight in him. He wasn't a fighter. He was soft.
This is a Democrat thing. I mean, also, like, meaning this, like, for the longest time, people may forget this. But
oh, Donna Brazile, that's her.
That was his campaign. Are you shitting me? That was Al Gore's campaign manager?
Donna Brazile, yeah, she was his manager.
I didn't know that.
So
here's the thing about Democrats. For the longest time, it was a third rail for Democrats. For Democrats to bring up any idea of the elections being stolen. In fact, it was a third rail in politics. And it was a third rail for a reason, because the integrity of the system depends upon elections and credible elections. Meaning that it's not like there's a king, right? If you challenge the electoral system, you said the elections are fake, and people, let's say a large percentage, believe you, then there's no way to govern America. Because at that point, legitimacy comes into question, and the integrity of the system depends upon legitimacy, that the public believes that whoever won is legitimate. That's the only thing that gives you the lever of power. And so this was very dodgy for them to touch in the electoral space until Trump got into the electoral space and started screaming that the elections are fake, it's all fake, et cetera, risking a civil war. He didn't seem to care. Gore agreed, didn't have to hunger in him. It wasn't in him, not to mention the third rail. If you remember, Clinton was dodgy about the third rail also, where she ends up getting Jill Stein to challenge the election in order to get a recount, because she doesn't necessarily want to touch the third rail of politics, saying that it might have been rigged or faked. Gore allowed the disenfranchisement of millions in Florida. And I mean that seriously, because all of those were Black communities, and most of those were Black communities. If you remember, Gore being Speaker of the House, gavel down one person after the next as they came up saying, We believe that the election were fake. We believe there needs to be a recount. All of these people were disenfranchised, and Gore would gavel them down one after the next, after the next. You can look at the video on YouTube.
Yes.
He didn't have an end.
I remembered it just being astonished.
Yeah. He didn't have an end. And this is meaning Gore, who was just cheated out of the election, gaveling down people telling him that he should fight for his own electoral.
Remember the Brooks riot, the Brooks Brothers riot? Where like the Brooks Brothers riot, they called it, during the counting in Miami-Dade, which I'm pretty sure is the biggest county in Florida. Basically these right-wing Republican Capitol Hill goons, who were all staffers for Republicans, were all bundled up on a plane, sent down to Miami-Dade, and they broke in on national television. You can look this up. And broke into and started beating up campaign the people who were counting the ballots. And that caused the stopping of the count. They stopped counting the votes in Miami-Dade because of that. A bunch of like little, 25-year-old little shits, from Capitol Hill went down there to do that. It's on television. It's on CNN.
That's what I mean. How's that not illegal? I mean, especially intervening in an electoral.
It was a coup. I mean, I remember Karl Rove going on PBS NewsHour during the crisis, which lasted from November 7th to December 20th, 2000, and saying, well, they can recount, but if it doesn't come out our way, we're going to have the military step in. Wow. I mean, it's a coup. I mean, for sure, it was a coup. We should, because we have other interesting things to talk about today. We should do that. We also have to talk about this, the $250 bill. So Trump apparently is pushing hard. The law says, ever since 1866, that a living person cannot appear on U.S. currency. Trump wants to create a new $250 bill, something that has never existed before. There used to be 500s and there used to be thousands, to celebrate the 250th anniversary of the United States. Of course, it would have the design, the mock-up would have Trump's scowling, glowering face on it. It's a very ugly design from a graphic design standpoint, not surprisingly, because that's where we are now. And anyway, a couple of people at the, in Treasury at the Mint have stepped down. They were because they were being bullied by the White House to do this. Apparently, it normally takes about 6 to 8 years to approve from the beginning of a conception of a new bill design to roll it out, because especially a high denomination note like that has to be super counterproofed, counterproof protected, right? Counterfeit protected. So the thing is, they're like, well, we can't do it. And also, it's illegal, and we don't want to, and it's gross, basically. Thoughts?
Well, I mean, if it's illegal, then that should be the end of the discussion or the conversation, Congress. Right, exactly. Congress would have to pass it, and it would be filibustered to death.
Hopefully.
You don't think so?
I'm not sure. I mean, you just mentioned what how much spine the Democrats are composed of. There's not a lot of calcium in those bones. Are they really going to, they won't filibuster to stop a genocide. Are they
going to? That's different. Well, that's something they agree with.
Yeah. They propose. They're on team genocide. Okay, but they won't go to the mat for anything that they supposedly actually care about. So, are they going to go to...
See, there's no cost for them doing this. I guess that's what I'm saying. Like, it's one thing for them to put themselves online when there's no cost. There's no cost. I don't think Chuck Schumer wants all of this money in his pockets, or Nancy Pelosi wants Trump glaring at her from her wallet. I don't think she wants that.
She'll use Apple Pay.
I don't know. I get the feeling that Nancy Pelosi, if they checked her icebox, she'd have a lot of gold bars. I hope you get my point, though. Like, I get the sense.
Rush have something in common, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, I don't get the sense that Democrats are going to be okay with this, because it's no cost in them fighting. Meaning there's no financial interest saying we need Donald Trump's face on money. There's no Israeli interest putting hundreds of million dollars into Democrats allowing Donald Trump's face on money. There's no cost for them to fight this. In which case, but their base hates it. So
I mean, look, the thing is, that is something right out of a third world country. I mean,
it is. It's Banana Republic stuff.
It's Saddam Hussein. It's Muammar Gaddafi. It's, you know.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's Banana. Like a lot of this stuff is Banana Republic stuff. We're just going to start wars. We don't need Congress. You don't need any of that stuff. The president, the strong man in and of itself is enough to do it. We are going to strangle other countries. We are going to put my face on money. They're going to put my face on money.
My face on money. I mean, we shouldn't even be talking about the legalities or whether it's possible to pass it through Congress. An idea like that should, a country that had proper unified values would literally just, Democrat, Republican, you know, everyone else would just agree, like, yeah, no, we don't do that. Like we don't rape children and we don't put the president's face on money. We just don't do that.
Well, rape is, considering Israel is a staunch ally of the United States and considered they just been put on the UN blacklist for being systematic rapists.
Well, and they just raped the Gaza flotilla people, apparently.
Yeah, exactly. So the whole raping of people being off the table, well, that's not the case. And the president putting his face on money, at the very least, an attempt to do so. Same.
It's crazy. Comments, Manchild, thanks for the dollar. With Congress needing to approve a Trump coin and a $250 bill, there's no way this happens. He has way too little time left in office to pull off a process that takes 7+ years. Hopefully. But I can't believe, but it shouldn't even be proposed.
Agreed. Both can.
Phileas Fogg, Pollock, CIA's favorite artist. At least two of his exhibits were funded by it. There's a field in academic history that deals with the so-called Cultural Cold War. Yeah, you know that theory, right? About Jackson Pollock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The paintings and everything else gets across. Kind of like, what is the other painter's name? What is the other painter's name?
It was an attack on socialist realism, right? Like the idea. Like
those block pictures of the Soviets dealt with real life, real physical matter phenomena, and then these kind of
totally abstract, meaningless.
Yeah, I don't want to call it esoteric.
Decorative.
Yeah, the abstractness of it all is the thing that negates this idea of the realism of the Soviet photos and states and culture. Yeah. Do you give it credence? I mean, like, there is something
to be said. Documented. We know it happened, right? We know it, yeah. We know it's true. Yeah. I do. Yeah. It absolutely occurred.
Well, I guess what I'm asking is, do you think it had the bang for the buck that they're trying to imply?
Oh, no. Although I think there's something to it. I mean, I think it's, I mean, you know, again, at the risk of sounding like Zizek and his Lacanian shit, the search for the real, but I'm obsessed with it. It is, you know, the last half of the 20th century, and certainly this century so far, has been defined in the United States by living in, by trying to promote we were trying to get people to not understand their own material realities. Like, for example, you live in the best country in the world with the highest living standards in the world that everybody wants to leave their country to come to our country. And that's why we're awesome. Except for the fact that when you actually drive through this country, whether you're in rural or urban areas, what you see is an ocean of people living in massive amounts of poverty that scores like number 38 on quality of life indices. You know, none of those things are true. Basically, Americans don't connect to what's true. And because of that, they can't possibly think about forming an opposition to their reality because they don't know what their reality is, or at least they're confused about what their reality is. I mean, they're not confused when they're sitting down to pay their bills every month, but they're confused the rest of the time.
Right. And they may think it's purely a factor of their own failings because the country is fantastic. Everybody else is living in wealth and et cetera, et cetera. I'm alone. I'm an individual, that type of stuff, as opposed to kind of putting the blame on society that allows this reality to take place. No, I get it. No, you're right. I mean, even the money is not attached to real world phenomena. Like, other countries can't produce $10 trillion to invade Iraq and Afghanistan and just put it on the credit card. Other countries need to actually have some kind of financial backing to whatever the thing that they're dealing with. We don't. It's a superpower. Like Batman.
Speaking of non-reality, so we talked yesterday about Trump's plans to send, and this makes me angrier the more I think about it for multiple reasons, to send U.S. aid workers who travel to the Ebola zone in the Democratic Republic of Congo he was trying to quarantine them at some new facility to be stood up in Kenya, supposed to open today. And, you know, as you pointed out, it's, you know, obviously he's racializing Ebola, right? Ebola, like, it's like in the public's imagination is a African disease. It's a disease. Diseases just go wherever, right? But the racializing of it is infuriating. And so is the, like, punishing people who are so noble that they're willing to go to a place to deal with this to treat people with this highly contagious, very fatal disease. And you're treating them like shit. And now the latest is that a Kenyan court. So, you know, I had brought up yesterday the question of, like, what about the Kenyans? Why do they want Ebola patients? Well, they don't, apparently. So a Kenyan court has just said, like, no, you can't build this. So currently that's on hold. So now Trump's like, well, I'd like to send them to Europe, but there's no idea of where in Europe they could, you know, who in Europe would want them or where that, how would that look or whatever. This is just it's just Trump being a mega turd again.
It's Trump being Trump. I mean, he's acted this way all the way through. I mean, and I remember people used to argue, even black people would argue, well, I don't know if he's racist. And it's like, okay, so when he's going after the African-American Museum, okay, why is he doing that? And it's not just racist, classes also. Mm-hmm. I mean, when Elon Musk comes in and is firing American workers who are working for the federal government and firing workers at Social Security and Medicare, okay, who is he affecting? And then they're still spending $2 trillion a year. So it's like, okay, so obviously this did nothing. And you guys don't have an issue in, let's say, increasing the wealth or maximizing the wealth off of the U.S. government for the people who are effectively of means. I guess I'm saying this is Trump being Trump through and through. It's disgusting. It's like these people are putting their lives on the line for others. And when they're trying to come back for some kind of treatment or so forth, where they would get the best treatment in the U.S., we're like, yeah, send them to Africa. Oh, no, send them to Europe. They're our vassals. They'll take them.
Who's going to go in the future? Yeah. If they do this,
there's that. But again, Trump doesn't care. I mean, from his point of view, we're okay with not having tourists coming into the country, right. Not having people from, let's say, China or from other schools wants to get their technical degrees and come into the country. Mind you, that is in our best interest. It is one of the things, like us being a melting pot and bringing people and getting the best and brightest from around the world. Because in the way that you point out, we have projected to the world that we are the greatest. Everybody wants to live here. That's not just being projected to the United States. The American dream is something that is being pushed out in media and everything else all across the globe, whether you listen to American music or American movies. You may take that as true, even if you live in a different country. And I'm saying that many countries, China being one of them, many of their dreams was to come to America and live in America. Many of those people work in technical fields that we can use and require. And us telling those people around the world to F off, it's not in their best interest. This is just another one of those cases.
Not good. We've got to talk about Israel and their latest outrage in Gaza, but let's get through the comments that we have hanging from the previous topic. Frank Field, thanks for the dono. The writers of Network could never imagine this shit. You know, it's funny that you brought that up because I was literally just thinking about that while we were talking. Like, you know, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. No, we're not mad as hell and we're totally going to take it more. Phileas Fogg, there are debates about whether Pollock's work was intended to strip art of the ability to speak literally about politics, interested in Ted's view. We talked about that. I do think that it's, you know, I mean, as a political cartoonist, obviously political art is what I do for a living. And I got to say, that is, yeah, I mean, you see, we have politics without politics in this country in terms of the electoral political system. And now we have political art without politics in it. You know, you'll like, you know, wokeism in some respects is kind of politics without politics. So it can be, especially when class is completely eradicated. And when you go to, and you look at even political cartoons, the least hard-hitting political cartoons are the ones that get the most reprints, get run all over the place, win prizes, and so on. So yeah, no, I think that was part of it. John D. Cockefeller, thanks for the $2. Can we make a Trump $1,000 note as a symbol of inflation under his governance? It can be our version of that African $1 million note. And don't forget, he already got rid of the penny, which was also a sign of inflation.
The penny was a sign of inflation?
Getting rid of the penny is a sign of inflation. I mean, the United States has had the penny since its founding. And like literally, he abolished the penny. And there are no new pennies being minted anymore. And a lot of people made the case that they're wasteful and that, you know, basically, you know, the prices have increased so much that the nickel needs. So now when you have a, let's say something rounds to 3 cents or whatever, it rounds up to five or whatever. So that's just getting rid of the penny is definitely a symptom of inflation.
That's interesting. I never thought of it that way. I mean, because even if you have inflation, you can still end up with a penny amount.
Well, think about
it. I guess you're saying rounding up to 5 cents.
If prices went up 3 times more than they are now, you wouldn't need the nickel anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Interesting. I guess for my thought, you always could end up with a number of something, something, 0.01.
You could. It's like it's less necessary because you have nothing that really is nothing that's really worth one penny at a certain point. When I was a kid, there were 5 French francs to the dollar, and they still had a centime. They had the French franc, and a centime is 1/100th of a franc, and that centime was what, like 1/5 of a penny, and you know, and frankly, they were very, very small, and like they were useless, and the French government eliminated them at a certain point. You know, it was like the smallest coin became the 5 centime, which was effectively a U.S. penny. We've got to talk about. So under the U.S. brokered ceasefire agreement signed back in October, Israel agreed not to have any direct control over Gaza over more than 53% of the territory, which is, as far as I'm concerned, 53% too much. But they now, in contradiction, Bibi Netanyahu unilaterally has said, give the order, we're going to make it 70%. Does the ceasefire fall apart at this point?
Well, wait, just to be clear, because they've already taken 60%, which is more than 50% that you just mentioned.
53, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Does the ceasefire fall apart? There was never a ceasefire. I'm sorry, there was never a ceasefire.
I mean, it was just because people are still shooting and killing each other? Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. And Israel... Look, if I enter into a peace agreement with you and I continue the war under the guise of a peace agreement, that's me continuing the war under the guise of a peace agreement. And I'm saying that's true in Gaza, that is true in Lebanon. It's true in both, which is the reason why Iran has extended its umbrella over Lebanon in any kind of negotiations. Basically saying, get your dog in order. Your rabid dog needs to be put down if indeed we're going to come to some kind of terms of an agreement. So that's why, I mean, like the Lebanese government that is effectively a vassal state that wouldn't fire a shot in anger at an invading military decided to make an agreement that apparently didn't include southern Lebanon, despite the fact that that's still Lebanon. Israel has even been violating that in its bombing of Beirut. So I hope you get my point, right? I'm trying to make the point of saying these guys go into negotiations and ceasefires, quote unquote, as a way of continuing to pursue their war aim, knowing full well that the United States is not going to say anything about it or do anything about it. They're going to turn a blind eye. And so, yeah, of course Israel is doing this. I think what's interesting is, are they doing this because they believe that negotiations with Iran are proceeding? Meaning, are they doing this to play spoiler? Because it seems like they've increased the amount of murdering that they've done over the course of the last couple of days as talks of negotiations have started.
We'll have to leave that there. JT, have an awesome weekend. We're going to record on Sunday. We'll talk about that later.
Yes.
See you guys Monday, 9 a.m. We're here Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. And stay tuned for TMI Show with Manila Chan and myself, Robbie West, filling in. Appreciate you guys tuning in. See you later. Bye.